Hello, my friends, and welcome once again to the Deeper Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Paul White. This is the 24th day of September, and this is the day that we are in Chapin, South Carolina. On this Friday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we have our monthly meeting with our friends in South Carolina, and then we have our 5 p.m. Eastern Time meeting on Sunday this weekend, and we hope you'll be with us if you're in the North Georgia or the South Carolina area. Come be with us. Of course, we will record both of those encounters and we'll air them on our website and right here where you're listening to the podcast. You'll be able to catch those in the next couple of weeks. And then next Sunday, we'll be in Poplar Bluff, Missouri at my dad's church, Southside Poplar Bluff General Baptist at 10:30 Central Time on the third day of October. In the meantime, tomorrow we'll be letting you in on what's coming up on the Sunday message. And then next week, next Thursday, I believe, is the 30th day of September. That will be the Deeper Daily Podcast essay edition that we try to write one every month. We do write one every month and have for several years now and put it up on the last day of the month. So we hope that you will enjoy that. And I am back in Genesis 4 today. We are talking about Cain and his encounter with God after his sin. And he says in verse 13, my punishment is greater than I can bear. The word there is really, my iniquity is greater. It's a little closer in the Hebrew to this. My iniquity is greater than I can receive forgiveness for. There's no theological concept of forgiveness of sins at this point in the Bible. That would be to interpolate into the story our idea of forgiveness of sins. It just isn't there. We don't have anything laid out for that. But there is a natural understanding when you have crossed a bridge too far. Cain knows it because he knows that there's no bringing Abel back from the ground. His statement that my sin, my punishment, my iniquity is greater than I can bear or greater than I can be forgiven for is the natural assumption we would all come to when we put something into the ground, whether it's the literal body of Abel, or we bury a friendship, or we bury somebody beneath a load of guilt or hatred or malevolence, whatever. We know that there's really no coming back from it. This is also one of our indicators early in the text that there's going to have to be something supernatural happen for all of our Adam sins, our Eve sins, and our Cain sins. We're going to need help. We're not going to be able to bear this load. And anyone who goes out of their encounter with the Abels of their life, or the tree of the knowledge of good and evil of their life, and they walk away from that encounter, they walk out into a world as a vagabond where they've cut off relationships, they've cut off communion, community, communication. But they're also then bearing something they'll never be able to get rid of. And this is why the Bible ends up taking us into the story of Jesus where God becomes man so that all of our incidents, and that's the best thing I can call what Cain does in this scenario, but all of our incidents are then wrapped up in what Christ has done for us. Because I don't think these stories do you any good if they're about somebody else. They only do you good if they're about you. This is my issue with us always insisting these ancient Genesis stories are literal. When they become allegorical, then I become Adam. I become Eve. You become Cain. But you also become Abel. Sometimes you're the victim of a bad encounter. You don't win every battle. You don't keep every friend. But often, and maybe more often than not, we're Cain. We're the aggressor. We're the one burning bridges. We're the ones who end up cutting off community and communion and facing a punishment or a sin greater than we can bear. In verse 14, I want to put this with it because this is part of the conversation. Cain says, and now he's really talking. This is the most we've heard from him. Surely you've driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face. The ground there is Adamah, This is the region of his homeland. You've driven me out from the only place I know, and I shall be hidden from your face. This seems odd because we have the knowledge that God is omnipresent, that God is everywhere. And the Bible confirms this over and over. But in Genesis 4, he doesn't have this knowledge. He has no reason to believe that God exists outside of the Garden of Eden or outside of the land just next to the Garden of Eden, which is where he's apparently raised and lives his life. Because of that, he thinks that if he leaves the spot he's in, he can flee from the face of God. This seems to be an ancient idea that lasts considerably in the Old Testament. It takes a higher level of revelation in the Old Testament to get to the place where man starts to see God as omnipresent. David does, ultimately. You remember David writes that I could make my bed in hell and God would be there. It's like, wherever I go, God is. But we call David the apple of God's eye, man after God's own heart. He has a revelation of God that exceeds his peers. Consider Jonah, and this is a character we've wrote a lot about lately, and I've been working on a work about Jonah. And one of the things that strikes me is that Jonah gets in a boat to go the opposite direction from Nineveh, and he does it to flee. The text literally says this, to flee from the presence of the Lord. Now, when I read that, I think, Jonah, you're stupid. You can't flee from the presence of the Lord. But Jonah's mentality is that you could. That man could flee from the presence of the Lord, because wherever God called you, wherever God spoke to you, that's where God is. And wherever God told you to go is where God's going to go. You should go there. Israel got used to that with when the cloud by day moved and the fire by night moved. Wherever the cloud was and wherever the fire was, that's where God was. So when it moved, you better move, because that's where God went. If you want to be in his presence, you go there. Now, God doesn't clean up Cain's theology, and you'll notice a lot of times in the Bible, God doesn't come in and fix man's theology. He lets us discover these things by a journey. He lets us go down these roads until we land in the appropriate spots. But on the way on those journeys, it seems as if we make a lot of lefts and a lot of rights. We turn off the main course a time or two, and we end up missing it theologically. Cain's statement, you've driven me from the face of the ground, I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be hidden from your face is Cain's way of saying you're not going to be able to see me anymore. However, that actually turns into a theological argument. So listen to Isaiah chapter 1 when God tells him, I'm sick of your sacrifices. I don't want your new moons and your Sabbaths. He says this in Isaiah 1:15, when you spread out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Even though you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood. And you might get to the end of that verse and go, well, that sounds to me like God's not going to hear people if they're guilty. But listen to the context. Verse 16, wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, put away the evil of your doings from before my eyes. Cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, rebuke the oppressor, defend the fatherless, plead for the widow. In other words, you and I are not going to be on good terms if you're not taking care of your neighbor. Cain's the first person to articulate this, and he articulates it well. You hide your face from me. Why, Cain? Because I don't take care of my neighbor. There's no real repentance by Cain, because Cain hasn't come to the idea of repentance. He hasn't come to the knowledge of forgiveness of sins. This is an early theological development in the Bible. So the story is taking us there, but we're not there yet. A lot more to do, as I'm sure you can imagine. We didn't even actually get all the way through verse 14. We'll try to do that tomorrow. See you then. God bless.